This goes out to the ABS fam, to the crew getting ready at the Pepsi can. DJ Triple T banging thunder with the high jams. My dog Bernie Gant smiles in the West Stands.
The ColoradoHockey.com podcast is brought to you by FSFAM.com, AVSFAM.com.
Behold, a cough, a sniffle, a laugh, and a giggle. This is a pop-up podcast from Colorado Hockey featuring Callie and Steven. Last names are tell because I can't say Stevens. Callie was nice enough to join us, even though she's about as sick as the Colorado Avalanche are in overtime. She's going to cough a little bit here. She's going to sniffle a little bit there. Put up with it because she says smart things between those.
This call is being recorded.
So, let's just start with the easy stuff really quick. So, let's do a status check on the Avs right now. And this is based on my theory of what got us here isn't going to get us there. Like, it's been a fun first half, but what is our status right now? What do you guys think is true? Like, if you had to say things that are true about the Avs right now, what do we know to be true? I could start too if you want an idea. Let's do that. I think the Avs are highly inconsistent, and I'm a little bit unclear on what that is, but I think it might be effort. What do you think? Name it true.
For me, they're very frustrating. Which probably goes along with your inconsistencies and all that kind of stuff. But it's frustrating to have this much talent on the team and then they actually don't show it all the time.
So what do you think, though? Is that like a distribution of talent? Because we have some of the top talent in the league.
Yeah,
and I think we can't pull it together.
I think that they're missing, like, after the first line. Like, of course, we have one of the best first lines. But then after that, a lot of people ask, wait, who? Because they aren't there. Our secondary scoring isn't there. On defense, we don't really have many big names that pop out. And our goaltending tandem has just, good Lord, Swiss cheese.
Right. So we're going to touch on all that in a little bit. What do you think, Steven?
I think going on just what Callie was saying, they're way too top heavy. I think that's pretty clear. Just because of the fact that, you know, the top line is not scoring, we've seen a couple games where, you know, Soderberg has come up big and things of that nature. But for the most part, the team is very top heavy. That goes for the defense as well. Same thing, very top heavy. And that's going to create those inconsistencies and the frustrations that you guys are talking about. You know, when you're relying so much on the same three guys every game, and right now, as Kelly also said, if the goaltending is not getting it done, then you really have to rely on those guys to show up every single night, which is, you know, it's just not possible. I mean, the best teams, you know, best players are not always going to show up. That's why you need those role guys. And right now, the Az role guys are just not making enough of an impact to carry them. And to be honest with you, I find them to be in a bit of a dangerous middle ground right now, where they sit. Obviously, as fans today, you know, sure, the team is in playoff contention. But, you know, how would you feel going into a playoff series right now as the team has looked? But then, you know, that goes into, I'm sure, things that we're going to talk about in a little bit. Just, you know, what decisions do they make? What's that next step, you know, for this season?
Well, let's just talk about it right now, because it's on my mind for sure. It's like, is this a year to even try to make a playoff run, or is this, you know, see what happens, see who's worth keeping, but playing the long game the whole time, not making any moves that aren't 2-3 years long? What do you think right now? Are we at a spot where we should do that, or do you think the Avs are even considering that?
I mean, when I look at it and I see, you know, what the Kings just got for Jake Muzzin, you know, I personally feel like I wish that we were actually sellers at this point. I've never actually been a big proponent of, you know, trading Barry. I think he's actually means a lot more to the team than some people realize. I know people are afraid that if he walks in free agency, it's a Stastny situation all over again. Then, you know, what do we do? But I personally see it as do whatever you can to keep him. Even with a guy like, you know, Cale McCaw coming up, I don't see why you can't have both those guys on one team. But on the other side of that, like I said, seeing what the guy like Jake Muzzin just brought back to Kings, man, I would not hate to be a seller right now, because the market is just booming for teams that are willing to sell. And, you know, if the Avs aren't ready just quite yet, but they're really close with all these young guys coming up, you know, maybe that's something you have to consider. The other side of it, I am not somebody who wants them to be buyers right now. I'm not paying top dollar for a guy like Kevin Hayes, you know, to be a rental and still not perform what the Avs would need him to perform.
Yeah, I think that's all fair. The Barry thing, I'm going to touch on that really quick. Barry to me is just like Z in the sense that he has a trade-off, right? He has an upside that's pretty cool when it's working, but you have to take the bullshit with it. Z is always going to take a penalty. It's going to happen. He's going to breathe on somebody, they're going to fall over, penalty. With Barry, I mean, all I've seen him do is consistently produce offensively, and he's never been touted as a defensive defenseman. So for me, I'm wondering, is it more the chemistry or who we put him with, or do we really expect him to up that side of his game to be a player worth keeping? So it's weird because most of my stuff comes from what I hear from people on Twitter and whatnot. Social media shouldn't count, but it does. And so like, I'm a fan of that too. I think that there's a lot of guys on the team who are underrated, and we always have to have this group of whipping boys, and he seems to be in that group right now.
No, I definitely would put him in that group. I mean, just look at the love a guy like Sam Girard gets when he does one of his, you know, spinoramas, and he looks awesome doing it, and the guy's got so much skill. But I don't see people too often, unless it's more of the, you know, analytic guys, really going after him for his night in and night out performance, which have not been good for quite some time. And yet, you know, Barry does something awesome, and it really goes under the radar because he always does it. So we're just expecting it from Tyson. Whereas, you know, a guy like Sam, on the other hand, people, you know, will love when he does something kind of good or, you know, great. But then when he does, you know, a lot of the bad stuff on defense, a lot of it gets overlooked. It's quite interesting.
What do you think, Kelly?
I think Tyson Barry is definitely kind of a fire stick for most people. You either love him or you hate him. But that kind of brings me to, like, our secondary scoring. Tyson Barry is fourth in points on our team behind the top line. How do you argue getting rid of that guy? Because clearly he is a huge part of our scoring, which we have issues with beyond that top line. So for me, that's kind of a huge part of his game. But I think it's just finding his defensive balance, because he does need that defensive defenseman that's going to stay at home and understand, look, he's going up, he's going to be making those plays, he's going to be jumping up there, so I have to hang back. And I think that's kind of, the Avs have gotten caught before where both their defensemen are pushing up, so then they only have forwards hanging back, and it just doesn't work.
I mean, you could make an argument that everything except for our top line is suspect, right? I mean, I hear people saying our defense is shit, and a lot of times it is. But then you hear people saying, well, it's the goaltending. I mean, the goaltending sucks. We outshoot a team, and then we lose by 5 goals. So I'm a little confused myself on even where the Avs are going, because they keep getting these guys like a Girard or a Makar. Barry's not a big dude either, right? And I get the speed thing, but I worry what happens when we get to the playoffs and the refs put those whistles away, and it becomes a much more physical game with guys like that.
Well, you look at our game against even San Jose or LA, we just get beat up the entire game, and the fans don't like it. Everybody sits there in the Pepsi Center and they boo it, but it's like legal physical plays. We just have small guys that get beat up in and out every single play against the bigger teams. Not necessarily that LA's doing well, but they are bigger. And we've seen it on multiple occasions where our guys just get beat to shit.
Yeah. Hey, Steven, you don't have to wait for me to say your name, by the way. Jump in anytime. And disagree with Callie, too. She says some stupid shit. No, I'm kidding.
I do say some stupid shit.
No, you know, I agree. I mean, I watch you remember a lot of Eastern Conference hockey, you know, living in Rangers Devils Island land. And it's clear that both conferences play very different styles of hockey for the most part. You know, there are a lot more small speed-based teams in the Eastern Conference opposed to the West. But over the course of an 82-game season, you know, you have to position yourself with whatever's best going to get you through your conference. And I feel like, you know, adding Calvert and, you know, even the trade for Colin Wilson, the Avs did a lot of that to position themselves for that. But, you know, when those guys don't really fit in the top six or don't really belong in the top six, they're not getting that playing time to make a difference. You know, I know I just said how I, you know, avoid being a buyer, but man, would I love to have a guy like Wayne Simmonds on the team. I mean, somebody that you can actually stick in the top six and they actually belong there by both talent and ability, but can really bust a guy. You know, that's something that top line, granted Gabriel Landeskog can do that, but do we really want him getting in guys' faces and risk, you know, injury when he's just as important as those other two guys? I mean, and maybe that's part of the issue with having such a top-heavy first line. And I know the Avs have tried and split them up, but that has not worked out that well either. So I do feel like it's kind of a work in progress, as good as they look at time.
Yeah, Joe Sakic, I mean, he's his whole life, he's been all about patience. I mean, the guy just waits everything out. And it's really frustrating as a fan, actually, but I get it, right? I think we're in a long game situation right now. I don't think the Avs have any business going for a playoff run unless they just catch fire. And the last 15 games have shown me that they're not catching fire at all. They're becoming a known entity in the NHL. People understand that top line. If you shut them down, we got nothing. And the way that they play us now is as soon as the game starts, they come out strong and they come out physical. And that seems to be enough to get the Avs off their game until a late game push that usually ends up in an empty net goal the other way.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but if the Avs, you know, got into the playoffs and if they had, you know, the option and whatnot, would Kale McCarr be eligible if given, you know, if the timing worked out right for him? Would he be eligible to play in the playoffs this year?
I don't know. Honestly, I know that he could join the team as soon as his season's over, so I'm guessing so. But I worry about what that would mean. I think that there's some sort of rule around 9 games, and then it becomes a different sort of contract. So I'm not really sure on that one. But, I mean, that's interesting. Do you even want that, though? I mean, do you want to bring him into that as his first NHL exposure?
Well, it's dependent on how the Avs look to finish the season. Now, I'm not exactly in the, you know, opinion that the Avs should be making a jump at a goaltender. I know I've been seeing the Bobrovsky things left and right. Every single Avs fan seems to want to bring Bob to his team. You know, I don't know if that really makes any sense for where the Avs are, considering what they would probably have to give up. I mean, I have no issue giving up, you know, a Volley just because of the fact of, you know, I don't think he's coming back when his contract's up anyway. But, you know, is there more in-house things we can do? Is the next goaltender of the Avalanche currently on the Avalanche? You know, I think both Frank and Ruby could be that type of guy. But, you know, I mean, the goaltending the Avs have put out there this year hasn't shown to be a future number one.
The way the Avs are tooled, you need a lights out goaltender is my opinion on that. That you can't, I mean, I think that's passed. I think we saw it with Craig Anderson. He was a lights out goalie for a couple of years and got traded. And with Varley, he was for a couple of years too. I mean, he was top of the league, in my opinion, in a lot of ways, especially breakaways and, you know, the kind of thing you're going to get from a defense that's a little suspect. But I just, I don't know anymore, man. I think that the way that this team is put together, we need a guy who's lights out, and I don't see one out there that's easy to get.
No, I mean, I would certainly agree with that. I mean, I think that any team that's won, you know, a recent memory, if you look at what, you know, Vegas was able to accomplish last year, you know, you put a great majority on that, on Fleury's, you know, back. And that's what good teams have, you know, good teams have, even if it's only for a year. You know, goaltenders can kind of be like a relief pitcher, you know, in baseball. One year they're awesome, the next year they could be complete waste. But in that one season, you know, if you're a team that's going to be able to have a legit chance to win the Stanley Cup, you have to have a goalie that's actually showing up day in and day out, and you feel like you can get a shutout. And I don't think you can say that any of the goalies on, you know, the Avs roster give you that feeling.
I don't see anyone in the pipeline that gives me great confidence for now or the future, if we're being honest. I like a lot of the guys, but I haven't seen from any of them something that's got me just so inspired to say, that's our guy. That's our long-term guy, or even our short-term guy, really. And not because they're bad goalies. I love Vardy. I just think he's been here too long. I think that there's a lot of baggage that came with the previous coaching staff and the GM. And I think that it's just one of those things where sometimes you need a change, and that could be exactly what it is, both for him or somebody like Bob.
I was just going to say regarding Volomov. Now, a lot of us, you know, NHL guys are so different than any other sport. You know, we essentially don't know anything that's going on in their personal lives. It's a very little bit that we see on social media. But the one thing I do know is that, you know, he has a, you know, social media famous girlfriend. And he honestly seems to care more a little bit about, you know, fame on that side than he does really about hockey, from what I can see. I mean, I don't even see him showing too much emotion anymore. And he used to. He definitely used to. You know, a lot of chops at guys' ankles and, you know, yelling at his own teammates. And I don't really see any of that fire anymore. And maybe, like you said, maybe things have just gotten stale and that fire is not there. So maybe it's just kind of a change of scenery thing that he's needed. I wouldn't be surprised if he went somewhere else and was awesome. I just think that his tenure with the Avs is pretty much running out.
Okay, so for me, the thing that's frustrating is at the beginning of the year, both of our goalies looked good. They were both battling for that spot. They were both trying to get it. And I don't know what changed, but it's like watching two completely different people out there. Farley's save percentage right now is a .908, and Groobies is a .891. And that is horrifying. Like, there are backup goalies out there that have better save percentages than both of them. Their goals against average is just about 3 apiece, which is kind of ridiculous as well. But along with small guys, the Avs like small goalies too, which is frustrating because we have watched the Avs get killed by large goalies. You sit there and you watch Petrostroyas and Hellebuck and whoever else, all of these gigantic goalies that are 6'3 plus, and it just seems like they cover so much of the net. Their pads are so long that they can just go post to post without even sneezing at it. You know, Varley can't even go post to post anymore and stop the puck on a simple wraparound. And that is so frustrating to watch because he used to do that like it was no big deal. He used to make these incredible saves like it was no big deal. And I don't know what's changed because it's both goalies. It's not just one. So you almost have to look at, well, what has changed to make both of our goalies suck? Because they've both sucked at the exact same time.
It's true.
So that's kind of where I'm at with it. Was it a mentality thing? I don't know. And the other part is with Varley, I think he does still have that fire, but it's not shown the same. Because this year, I did go to the practice where he ended up pretty much getting in a fight with Nathan MacKinnon. That was really interesting to see. They kind of whistle, and it had to be broken up by guys on the ice because they were just tossing them at each other. And so I think that speaks to the frustration of the team as well. And Nathan MacKinnon's yelled at Bednar and different things of that nature. And so I think we're starting to see the frustration of this team come out, and it's not necessarily in the best of ways, and it's not channeled in the best of ways. And I think that that just speaks to this season as a whole already.
I'm just having a flashback to the Arvidsson goal, the wraparound, which, I mean, you know, you could speak to a lot of things with the Avalanche struggles with Pierre, but, I mean, you saw a replay of the wraparound goal, and by the time the replay was over, you know, Volley's skate hadn't even touched the other post yet. I mean, the slow reaction time, to be honest with you, some of it I don't even know how to explain at this point. It's just, it's been really bad, you know, goalie play all around. So a lot of it I can't explain. I try to come up with reasons why, you know, he struggled, but it's both of them. You know, so you can't even just say, you know, well, Volmo's been here for a while, and, you know, is it bothering him that he's not the hero that he was for a little while with the top line, you know, being so important? But, I mean, you know, both of them have struggled mightily, and Volley's actually been better, as scary as that is. You know, that's how bad they've been. So, I mean, really, what's the reason? A lot of previous years, you know, we put on the defense, and listen, a lot of members of that defense are subpar in terms of defensive skill, but I don't put a lot of it on them. I see a lot of chances that should be corralled and a lot of, you know, bounces that just aren't taken well. It hasn't looked good all around.
Yeah, I mean, you touched on a lot of things right there. Let's backtrack to the MacKinnon thing just really quick. I get he's frustrated, right? And it's not uncommon for teams in their practices to have guys even drop the gloves and actually throw the punches. I didn't see what you're talking about. I vaguely heard about it. But to me, I'm not mad if somebody's frustrated and they want to be better, right? But I don't know. He's kind of like, I feel like we're in the eye of the storm with him right now. Like, he's not getting as paid as much as Mikko's going to get paid. And I think that he has a bit of an ego. Most guys who are really elite do, right? He's competitive that way. So with the team that's not really performing as well as he thinks that it should, a coach who isn't coaching the way he should or he thinks he should, and then the money thing that, you know, is clearly going to become a thing. Like, is it in his head? Are we going down the path of another Duchesne moment where it's just he was here for the wrong years and we're not going to see that peak and get the best out of him?
God, I hope not.
I mean, we saw it with O'Reilly. You know, we saw it with Duchesne. You know, it's something that's going to be at the back of, as you know, as the fans' minds, because it's happened multiple times of late. You know, I can only hope that, you know, he's happy where he is because of the fact that, hey, listen, you know, Mikko was having, you know, a better season than him by a decent margin at the very beginning, and yet he was the one who was named captain for the Central in the All-Star game. So people still look at him as the reason a lot of that's happening. You know, as great as Covanton is, people don't say, like, oh, well, these two guys are having such a great season because of Mikko. For the most part, you know, Nathan's been given a lot of the credit. So I think that's a big part. You know, I think he can see that appreciation. I'm sure he'd like that. But, you know, money is power. And, man, you know, that's like you said, it's going to become a thing.
And then it just keeps getting bigger, though, right? I mean, you see these other teams with these huge contracts. And when you start to get these really great players, they expect that at some point. So good on the Avs for locking Mac up the way they did. But Brandon's not going to come cheap, I don't think. I mean, he might even be cool about it. He might be like, yeah, I want to be on this team, so I'll take a million or two less or whatever. But that's still going to be a huge chunk of money. He's going to be making more than the vets on the team. And then we got guys coming up who are also, I mean, I think that we're looking at some stars coming up from our most recent drafts. And who knows what we're going to get this year. So it's a weird thing. Like, if you're playing GM, that's a whole other side of the game you have to think about, right?
I think we're looking at, like, 876 for Rantanen. No joke. I mean, I seriously think that's about what we're looking at. I think because, like you said, you know, he likes being with the Avs and hometown discount type of thing, I could see him not going quite to 10. But I'm honestly thinking, like, an 876 is what we're talking about.
So what do you do at that point? Just... I mean, is there such a thing as taking somebody like Mac, who you know is super valuable and you want to have him long term? So at this point, before the contracts are even talked about, you're like, hey, look, we're just going to modify your contract to pay you what we think you're worth. Do you think they ever do something like that?
I mean, I don't know if I've ever seen a restructure in the NHL. You know, we see it all the time in football and a lot of different opt outs in baseball that they do, but I've never quite seen anything like that in hockey.
Yeah, if it was possible, would you? Bonuses and stuff like that either, like if he's got a bunch of bonuses that are coming up, or if it's written into his contract, if he hits a certain point, like he gets X amount of money if you hit this certain point through this many years. I don't know how all that works with NHL contracts either.
And it's not like this is his only money. He's doing commercials with Sidney Crosby. He's making some other money outside of here. So it's got to be an ego thing, right? I mean, I don't think that he's struggling to pay the rent, metaphorically,
yeah,
of course.
I mean, That's all, you know, that's all on him, though. That depends on, you know, I mean, but, like, once again, like, we don't see opt-outs. We don't see a lot of that stuff in the NHL. Well, you know, what is he going to do? Hold out in the middle of a long-term contract? I don't think you can really do that. You know, he doesn't really have any type of say because his contract is not close to being up. So in reality, he would just kind of have to deal with it and hopefully, for our sake, just play even better.
What I'm saying, though, is I don't think that he would do that. I don't think he would hold out, but I think that he would kind of fester. He seems like a guy who holds a lot in. He doesn't actually seem like a very happy guy from everything I've seen, but all I see is what I see on TV and Twitter, so I probably wouldn't be happy either. But my thing is, like, do we look at him as that just long-term guy? Like, we'd like him to end his career in that same jersey kind of thing? And if so, do you make a move now that maybe would be cheaper than the move later when his contract does come up and suddenly other teams are throwing huge money at him, kind of like when Sackett got offer-cheated? That's a word, right? Offer-cheated?
I think there's a bit of a different view of McKinnon, probably because of when he came to the team. You know, if you think about it, now, granted, I'm personally happy it happened this way just because of, you know, they have personalities. I think that Landeskog is the perfect captain for the Avalanche because of the way he plays the game, his personality. But the Avalanche didn't realize that they would be picking so high again, even, you know, after Landeskog was, you know, came to the team. So if they would have picked McKinnon first, you know, that was a easy choice for a captain. But he's definitely not captain material. But his timing of the team was quite interesting because, you know, Duchesne was still young, and people loved Matty because of the fact that, you know, he pumps his fist when he realizes he's going to be the Avalanche pick, and it's a big deal. You know, he grew up an Avalanche fan, and that's a really, really big thing for Avalanche fans to have one of their own come to the team. And then, obviously, Landeskog comes to the team, and, you know, he's definitely the next captain and a big deal. And now here comes McKinnon because the Avalanche are bad, and now it's almost like, you know, this sucks. We're kind of tired of being this terrible team. But at least we got this really good player. But he kind of gets overlooked now because they had so many other, you know, good players. You know, O'Reilly became a fan favorite, just kind of becoming a little bit of an unknown and doing great things. So he kind of gets lost. And I feel like now, fast forward, he's the star of the team, but some people still have that same opinion. Like they never grew, you know, they never kind of got that attachment that they got to some of those other guys.
Yeah, really good points, actually.
I feel like he's hard to get emotionally attached to because I don't know. Like you said, he's kind of seems unhappy. And like personally going to practices, he never comes out and signs autographs for people ever. Landeskog does, Rantanen does, all these guys do. So then the emotional attachment is made for the people that do go to practice and get autographs and things of that nature, because those guys do come out. They do interact. Nathan doesn't. I've never seen him voluntarily come out and autograph after a practice. And I think
he's just an introvert, right?
Yeah, I think, I don't know. This is my personal belief. It's probably not right at all, but I think he's kind of socially awkward. That's just the vibe that I get from him. And so he just doesn't do that stuff. So then when you're seeing other guys, meeting other guys, seeing their personalities, things of that nature, it's easier to get an emotional attachment with them. And even like in inner just seems very business minded, and doesn't really show emotion necessarily like the other guys do. And a lot of fans really fit the personalities. And so I think it's just easier to get attached to them. But complete skill wise, like Nathan's an amazing player. He's easy to get attached to just by what he does on the ice and his skill level. So I think it just depends what
I'm
kind
fine
of fan
with
you
it
are.
Too. Like, I don't think it's weird how we expect that you have to have a certain amount of outgoingness. You have to be willing to sign a certain amount of autographs or take pictures from your car kind of thing. Like, I don't know. It's weird that we expect that, but it's kind of what you expect out of professional players now. It's part of the almost the entertainment of the game, right? I mean, you like a guy who gets excited after scoring a goal too, even though that wah moment was hilarious where he got in trouble for celebrating. But
that was a big fire stick for people too.
I love your use of fire stick. I'd never heard that before.
I don't know. That's just my go-to.
But so when you look at that, like Duchesne dealt with that, right? And to give McKinnon credit, he came back the next day after his little fit on the bench and said, you know what, that was really stupid. I apologize. That's all on me. True or not, I felt like it was. I mean, when he did that, he looked truly embarrassed by it. He looked like he'd had a conversation with Landy probably. And I mean, to Bednar's credit too, he could have kind of showed him up on the bench a little bit more than he did too with that. But he just went and talked to him. And I don't know. I mean, I think about like, you know, in the whole kind of theme of all this for me is like, is what got us to this point going to get us any further? And I think no. But the pieces that might still do it is I think Bednar's an unknown. I think a lot of people think he's going to get us close and then we'll get a real coach and he'll take us to the cup. But I'm not sure he's doing it wrong. I mean, if you look at the pieces he has and how he plays them and his patience and the way that matches the patience of Sakic, I feel like he's a long-term plan and he could develop into a coach who can actually get us there. And he's not a pushover either. While I was friends with the players, I don't believe Bednar is at all.
Bednar's won at every level. I mean, I don't think you can, you know, doubt his kind of ability to have a winning team. You know, ECHL title, AHL title. You know, granted, those are lower levels, but that's not something that comes easy. And obviously what he's done with the Avalanche, even with the struggle for this season, you know, so much credit to him. I definitely think that he can be a long-term coach for the team. You know, I don't like the idea that he can only grow these young players and then let somebody else take them to that next level. You know, there's kind of a level of players get comfortable with somebody and to the positive, not to the negative of being comfortable with them, to where, you know, he can really just grow with the team and, you know, become an NHL champion, obviously, we hope at some point. I know he gets a lot of, you know, people go after him, but I feel like it's the same thing that all NHL coaches deal with. It's because, you know, they, of course, they all end up having favorites. I mean, you know, I was always the guy back in 2010, 2011, who used to take issue with Cody McLeod, and so many people loved Cody, and I get it. I understand why anyone would love him. But just in terms of hockey talent, I never understood why he got so much playing time. And, you know, all NHL coaches, though, still have that guy. You know, in New York, Tanner Glass was that guy for the Rangers at one point. And you know, I mean, the Avalanche have their combos now, too, that we see. And we're wondering why, you know, Calvert's getting time with these guys or, you know, why Soderberg was kind of rotting in the bottom six and not getting chances to play with guys that had talent. You know, every coach is just going to have their favorites because it's the guys who work hard. And NHL is always going to be, you know, number one, if you don't work hard, you're not going to get playing time. You know, you're going to be put on the bench no matter how good you are. But I think Bednar is great for this team, and I think he's exactly what the Avalanche need.
I mean, I agree with everything that you said on that. I wonder at times, though, like, I'm going to go down this rabbit hole, even though it's going to derail us completely, but what the hell? Okay. So McLeod, right? I mean, hockey skills alone, no, you're right. He's not that great of a guy. But what he does for a coach is he shows up the same way every time. You know what to count on. In his case, he's going to punch somebody in the face. He's going to take a penalty, but he's also going to stand up for guys, and he's going to start a lot of shit on the ice, and hopefully it goes our way sometimes. So then you get a guy like Bork. Everyone wants to hate a Bork. He's in the whipping boy club for sure, right? And I get it. He's not top talent. There's no doubt about it. But every fucking game, you get the same Bork. You know he's going to go hard. He's going to hit clean. He's going to do all the things that kind of get an energy thing going. And he's not going to play a ton of minutes. And to me, there is still a role for a guy like that in the league. Not something like a Parker who, you know, is out there to beat people up. But somebody like a Calvert or a Bork who's absolutely out there for the intangibles, the things that don't show up on the score sheet. As obnoxious as that statement is, I hear it all the time. I'm like, yeah, but we kind of need things on the score sheet. To me, there's still that role, especially when you have guys who aren't really prime time. And this could be another rabbit hole when I say that, because we just got the opinion of the coach that Jost isn't prime time yet. But for me, this whipping boy club, I don't know how fair all of it is, other than people, it's the same people who would go to an MMA event and be upset if there wasn't blood, gore, and eyeballs hanging off the cage. It's there's a nuance to it. And I think that maybe those guys are still valuable. I'll be quiet now and let you guys tell me I'm wrong. It's cool.
I mean, I've always been of the belief that, you know, you can have bottom six guys who grind and, you know, put that effort in, who can still have honest skill. You know, I look at a guy like Sheldon Dries, and I see him, and, you know, that's a guy to me that you can put in the bottom six, and not only will he give you that effort, but he can actually, you know, do things with the hockey puck. You know, you put Bork out there, and there's no pure ability. I mean, McLeod is still, you know, wasting a roster spot for the Rangers now. You look at somebody, I know things get a little too analytical nowadays, but if you look at some of the analytics, you know, the penalties that McLeod takes compared to whatever else he does on the ice, I mean, there's really nothing that he does for Rangers aside by, you know, taking penalties. And there, you can't tell me that there's not guys currently, you know, on the Eagles that can't be doing what, you know, Bork is doing and have more skill doing it. I refuse to believe that.
And I 100% agree with that, because I would like to see Dominic Toninato back up and actually play, because I think that he could take that roster spot a little bit better than Bork and actually play defensively. And for whatever reason, Bork seems to find his way onto our penalty kill, and that's, oh my God, just stop that. Just stop. Him on penalty kill is like the worst thing ever.
I can't come up with a guy on the Eagles I wouldn't rather see, to be honest with you. Michael Jolly, you know, O'Connor, Toninato, any of them, seriously. Just, like I said, just skill. At least they can do something with the puck. And I don't know how this happens. Maybe it's just me because, you know, it just drives me crazy whenever it does. But there are so many times that the Avs get some sort of, you know, PK breakaway, or, you know, the bottom six gets a breakaway, and who's the guy who ends up with the puck on his stick in front of the net? It's him every single time. Every single time. It's Nieto every single time, and he doesn't know what to do with the puck, and it drives me crazy. And it seems that the same guys who can't actually finish, and now listen, you know, when these younger guys and these Eagles players are given a chance, it could possibly be the same thing. They know better than we do, you know, the guys who run these teams, and clearly they haven't been given an opportunity. So we always cried for, you know, Big Rob being given the opportunity, and, you know, Siemens being given the opportunity, and clearly these guys just were not good enough. Same thing can be said about Stephen Elliott, despite the fact that he's actually on an NHL roster now. But, you know, clearly we knew less than the management does. But how do we know for sure is all I'm saying, unless these guys get that chance, you know?
And it's all philosophy too, right? I mean, maybe they don't have Bork out there to score goals. Maybe they don't expect him to be a skilled player. But maybe what they're looking at is like
him for defense, because that's not his thing either.
I don't know. Does anybody have the numbers on him? I'm not really a pull up the numbers on the podcast kind of guy. But if you guys happen to know his numbers, I'd be really curious to know, because they may not be as bad as we all think.
He is a -3 with 4 points.
Who's above him? Who's below him? Then on the plus minus.
Plus minus, let me look.
And I'll buy you a little bit of time too. Right after we get done with this, we're going to play a little game called Pay a Fool or Trade a Fool.
Plus minus, he is tied with JT Compher, Matt Calvert, Sven Andraghetto. Below him is Soderberg, Girard, Barbaria, Wilson, and Kerfoot.
I'm just saying.
Kerfoot at the bottom with a -10.
There's a lot of things that go into that, you know. I mean, just in terms of, well, obviously not getting specific with with zone starts and things of that nature and whatnot. Let alone playing time. Right, of course. You know, I'm looking at it more in a sense of if a guy's on the ice, he has to be able to contribute something, not just energy. And that's always driven me crazy. You know, the energy line type of thing. You know, these guys are out there specifically, PK especially, like what Callie was crying about, you know, walking on the PK. I understand that. I feel that I have those same tears because when you're on the PK, you're going up against the other team's best players. You cannot tell me that Bork belongs anywhere near any other team's top line. I mean, granted, those guys are not usually as defensive as a guy like he is, but that doesn't mean that he's going to win the 50-50 battles in the corners. You know, that's not how that works. I mean, you know, I'd much rather have, you know, a line of, as much as Nieto drives me crazy, you know, a guy that can actually move the puck somewhat. You know, I don't see Bork being able to do anything with the puck, to be honest with you. I mean, and his defensive skills, he's a grinder, but how defensively, you know, talented is he?
Yeah, I mean, those are all really good points, too. I wish I knew the Eagles better to tell you who I think should replace him. And I agree that that's a spot on the team almost anyone could come up and replace it. I mean, give anyone that shot, right?
Well, and we saw it with Graves. If you give someone a shot, maybe they will actually fight like we need on this team. Because Graves came up and you're like, oh my God, how do we send you down? Well, we send you down because we can't send anyone else down. Well, maybe you get an Eagles player up and they fight for that position. And I'm like, how do we send you down now? Because you have proven to me that I need to bench Bork and not play him anymore.
These guys come up and they're stoked, right? Nothing but like just energy, energy, energy. But then when they become a little bit familiar with where they're at and they're feeling a little bit good, it seems like they taper off. I think Girard was on fire to start, but now he seems like an average player at best to me. He seems, again, a little suspect in a lot of areas right now, and his upside hasn't been the same upside we saw before. You probably can't expect that from many players to be consistent through the entire year or their career, but I wonder if there's not something to that, that a guy comes up here and he's on adrenaline for a while and then he starts to fade. And as a coach or a GM, you can use that and then send them back down, or you can, you know, just kind of try to avoid it with a guy like Bork.
That's why I like the idea of bringing up Toninato, though, because we saw him almost all of last season. So we can compare him and Bork, and in my opinion, he's better than Bork as well. We saw it all of last season. So we have an entire season already to compare the two, plus what he's doing this season. Or someone like O'Connor, I think that he got sent down as well, but he was still playing better than Bork.
Well, yeah. You know, I think with Dominic, you know, a big part of it is, you know, he doesn't have a strong offensive game either, but his hockey IQ just seems to be significantly higher than, you know, that of what Bork has. And now, I don't know if anyone could answer me the question of why Agostino doesn't get a chance other than the fact that he's small.
Probably because of how far out his ELC is. I think he would have to go through the waiver process.
Ooh. I mean, isn't it worth it, though, at this point? I mean, no offense to the Eagles. I know it would cripple them a bit to not have him. But don't you want to make your you know, pro team as good as it could possibly be? I mean, if you're going to send a guy like, you know, Tyson Jost down, I mean, to me, there's no one better that they could replace him with than a guy like Agostino, because he's just so skilled offensively. And I know he's small, and I know, you know, he has defensive lapses, but offensively, he's so skilled. And I mean, I think in his NHL career, he has like 3 points in 10 games. And, you know, it's not much, but then again, he got almost no playing time in his chances that he had with the Avs. But definitely a guy, I mean, any guy can perform offensively depending on who they're around. I mean, anyone who's been paired with MacKinnon and Rantanen, you know, have fared pretty well. You know, Andrew Ghetto has gotten his chances. My God, I can remember years ago when Greg Bolden was on the Monsters, and he got called up to the Avs, and he even had success with some of the top line guys when given the chance. So anyone can have really good success with those guys. It's just the position that you're put in. And not that I want every line to kind of mimic a top six line. I understand the need for grinders and more of a physical play. But, you know, you have guys like Colin Wilson and Calvert, and these guys aren't offensively gifted, but they combine those two things. They have offensive skill, and they are grinders. They are true, great guys. I don't understand why you can't just try to have more guys like that, where you have to have somebody who's so focused strictly on, you know, being a grinder and has no, you know, offensive skill.
Yeah, I like Aggie. He got put to the All-Star game for the AHL. And he is pretty consistently above everyone else on the Eagles as far as pretty much every statistic you can have. He's definitely a solid player, and like he's been in it long enough to understand how things work and to understand like how to shut down other players and how to work his game and make it kind of his own thing, which I think is definitely helpful as well.
How old is he?
I think he's 26, maybe. Let me look.
I feel like he's been in the system forever. And I wonder if it's not this bias towards he kind of, you know, he got his shot and he didn't show up. But man, that was with some bad teams.
No,
the Habs had some years that.
I'm pretty, Kelly's at 26, maybe 28. He's right in that range. He's, you know, he's mid to late 20s. But I mean, when I look at it, the thing that I appreciate, you know, from a guy like Agostino is, despite his size, you know, he's only 5'9". I mean, that's what he's probably listed as. That doesn't mean he's even that big.
He's like probably still 5'7.5", yeah.
Right, right. No, he still gets in there. Like, he doesn't shy away from the play. Like, I've always kind of enjoyed Michael Jolly's play, but he shies away. Like, he won't really get in there. But a guy like Agostino, despite his size, he really does get in there. It's probably why his penalty minutes are decently high this season. Because he doesn't shy away from the play. You know, he does really get involved, which I appreciate.
Yeah, he's 28.
Oh, spot on.
He has 40 points in 41 games.
And it's pretty easy, too, right? Because I think last I saw he had 17 goals.
Yeah. 7 assists. He's a plus 11 with 53 penalty minutes.
I mean, but yeah, this is still a system, right? Like, we can't just expect that that's where the guys go who aren't good enough for the real team right now. Like, we have to have a team down there that's good enough to develop the guys that we know we want to bring up, the young guys. So it's one of those things where I wonder if he's not going to become that lifer.
Veteran developer.
There's a role for that. That's a real thing. Like, teams absolutely do that. I mean,
they have Cody Bass down there too that can take over that spot as well.
I think so.
There's a lot of politics that I personally can't explain when it comes to AHL versus NHL. I mean, Wozowski, you know, to me is an NHL defenseman. I mean, I know he's undersized as well, but you can't tell me that he can't, you know, be on a team like the Bruins and putting up legitimate points when you see what a guy like Tory Krug has done, you know, down there. I mean, you know, I personally see a lot of those things, but I don't really get the politics all the time. Like I said, you know, they know better than us as guys that we look at and we see just a stat sheet and we assume that they're great. But then again, you have to look at the other side of that, too, because a guy like, I know Callie's pretty big with the Eagles, so she can speak for this more than I can, but a guy like Ty Lewis, who's not lighting up the scoreboard, but from everything I've seen, you know, Ty's actually looks pretty good, you know, down the Eagles, but he has a different role with them, so he's not going to put up new points like he did, you know, when he was an amateur. So it's a different, it depends on where the coach is being, you know, putting these guys.
Yeah, I think it's interesting to see the lines that they have had with the Eagles. And I think it's interesting with Tyson Jost getting sent to developmental purposes. I'm hoping that they keep him down there for like a month because he has been playing well with them and he has kind of found his niche. But a few games with them isn't going to bring his niche back up to the NHL level necessarily. But I also think that him playing with players like Cout and stuff like that, our future players, then maybe at camp they'll be more comfortable, they'll put them on a line together, and then, oh, look, maybe we have another line potentially that's going to work together in our future because they've already developed chemistry with the Eagles, and then maybe it'll translate to the NHL. I don't know. Well, that's possible.
Well, I hate to disappoint you, and maybe this will take us into the game that was mentioned. But I would not be surprised if Tyson Jost was actually called up tomorrow for Saturday's game. Not that he'll play in Saturday's game, but, you know, back with the Abs when they kind of resume play after the break. And I don't know if that's because, you know, they want NHL teams to get a look at him at the NHL level before the trade deadline. I'm not saying that they're jumping to that conclusion yet that, you know, he needs a change of scenery. But I think that if the Abs were to make any type of significant or maybe a 2-year player instead of just a rental, I would assume that besides, you know, mid-level picks, that a guy like Jost and Connor Timmins, now that he's back on the ice, will be guys that teams look at?
I mean, Timmins is suspect just because of his health. He has a history definitely with the brain, but why not Comfer? I know he's a fan favorite, one of Cali's absolute favorites, but has he shown his true upside on this one, or is he still just a guy who's kind of that middle of the pack guy? Like, he can have a great night, no doubt. He'll throw a hat trick and maybe once every couple of seasons, maybe, I don't know, maybe more, but there's so many of those guys who are right in that. So let's jump into that little game.
I would personally be surprised. I mean, God forbid if something ever happened to Gabriel Landeskog to where, for whatever reason, he was out for a full season. That, to me, is the guy who gets to see. So I would be shocked if the Avalanche even considered moving him, unless they were getting, you know, a long-term contract, a guy who's already under contract for years or something really, really legitimate. I can't see them moving JT anywhere.
Are you just trying to make friends with Kelly? Is that what you're saying?
My bias side with facts says JT is on our power play, our penalty kill. He's on in the last minutes of games. He's a huge player on our team.
Right, level set with me really quick. What's his downside?
He's not going to put up points.
Just so I know that you're playing for, you know, playing real here. Like, what's his issue to work on?
Smaller guy for the game that he tries to play. He is a little bit more injury prone. Last season, he had two different injuries that put him out for a lot. He had a concussion this season. Because of that nature. He doesn't score as much as I would like him to, but he does have the potential.
He's kind of like McKinnon, too, that he doesn't smile ever.
Are you happy for his downsides? Are you happy?
Well, after Steven says some words, I'm going to ask you, have we seen the best of him? Is there more? But don't answer yet. Go ahead, Steven.
No, you know what? Forgive me for kind of stepping on feet here, but I honestly think one of the issues with JT is he thinks he's better than he actually is right now. And that's only to say, I remember when Ryan O'Reilly first got started, and, you know, he didn't put up big points at all. You know, he was definitely a bottom six type player. But one of the things that I always saw about, you know, O'Reilly was he always played like he was better than he really was. And in the end, you know, he ended up proving a lot of people wrong because he was that good. He just wasn't there yet. And I honestly see a lot of similarities between what Ryan O'Reilly did when he was on the Avalanche to what JT is doing now. And to be honest with you, he's actually probably further along at this point in his career than O'Reilly was. It took O'Reilly quite some time, and he had to play with the right line mates to really have that type of impact. JT, give him credit. You know, he performs with some, you know, bottom feeders around him. I mean, just the stuff that he's able to do on the penalty kill, and the fact that he forces the issue and he creates scoring chances on the penalty kill when there's guys like, as we mentioned before, Bork around him, it's impressive. It really is.
All right, I'm ready, Kelly.
All right, what was your question?
Have we seen the best of him? Is this his peak, or does he get better from here?
I think just based off of his rookie year compared to what he's done this season, he is kind of in a slump right now, which is frustrating for me to say and watch. But I think that he has shown that he does have a higher level that he can get to. That he just needs to develop a little bit farther, I think. I don't think we've seen his ceiling yet. I think, for me, it's sometimes frustrating to watch because he is a really good setup man, and we have him with some people that don't necessarily finish completely. So I think that he could have a higher ceiling and a higher potential if he was with the right players that could finish his miraculous passes that he makes, because he has is this season that just haven't been finished at all. And
miraculous.
I think miraculous. They've been okay. So beautiful. I can't even. but he throws the puck where a player should be. Whether they're there or not is kind of the issue. He puts the puck, you know, in scoring opportunities, and he's got really good vision on the ice. But I think he needs those players around him that are at the same level. Is let's get goals, let's, you know, be there for this play, and I don't think that he has that just yet.
Does he come out to sign autographs though?
All the time.
Okay, well, he's got that. He doesn't seem to smile much, but that seems cool.
Because you don't know him.
I don't know him.
He signed my jersey to Cali from the Ginger. All right.
Well, he must have saw the signs. All right, take a breath for a second. Drink water if you have it. We're going to do this game. Or a sniffle or a cough, whatever you're into, Kelly.
Yeah, whatever I need to do.
Okay, so we're going to play a game called Pay a Fool, Trade a Fool. Just came up with that, by the way. It's awesome. And here's what you have to do, though. Going into it, you can't pay attention to current contracts. Just assume that everybody's up, okay?
Okay.
So they could go away or they could stay. We either pay them for what they think they're worth or we get rid of them. So let's start with Kerf. Let's assume that he's shown us how good he is and we have to decide, are we going to keep this fool or are we going to trade this fool?
Trade.
Okay. You still there, Steven?
Yeah, I would keep him.
Okay. Don't say any more for a second. Let's go through a couple and then we'll double back the ones you care about, okay? Just for giggles, do you guys think we should trade or keep Bork?
Trade.
Trade. I'll take a couple pucks.
You'll take a couple pucks? Yeah, maybe a roll of tape too?
Maybe a used stick from someone?
Nah, you're getting greedy. What about Nieto? Long Beach native, by the way, Matt Nieto, just in case you weren't clear.
Top line forward, Long Beach native, Matt Nieto. Trade.
Trade. There's younger guys who can do the same thing.
Okay. What about Nemeth? He's not a young guy. He's a different scenario. Oh, that was deep.
This fits along the same lines to me as Nieto. You know, I mean, the Avs and their love obsession with the waiver wire. You know, I trade all those guys.
See, and for me, it's either him or Barbs. Keep one, trade one.
Well, do that for me then. Which one are you keeping?
I think I'm going to keep Nemeth and trade Barbs.
Ooh, I wasn't expecting that. What's up? Doesn't Barbs have better hair? I'm just kidding.
I mean, Nemo can straight up stare someone down and scare the shit out of them.
Okay. And you know what? I feel like Barbario can clear the zone better. That's my real hockey take on it.
Come on. Honestly, Nemeth cleared it into the out of play area.
Put a bookmark in that one. I want to talk about that one. Carry on.
I get rid of both and like Graves get playing time.
Touché.
Yeah, Graves has been really impressive, but don't talk about that yet either. We go down rabbit hole so bad. All right, so we're ramping up a little bit. What about Wilson?
Conditional. As long as he's in the bottom six, I keep him.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it.
I mean, there's been two Wilsons this season so far, so we'll see what post-injury Wilson's like. But yeah, the guy who started the season, I'm like, whoa, maybe we did get a good guy here. All right, let's just do the Barley thing right now. So Varley, he's been here for a long time. Maybe he's a little bit of a head case over things right now. He's had history here that is both good and bad, both on and off the ice. He's a guy who, I mean, I don't know. Has he given up on us? Do we give up on him? Like, do we pay him and extend him as an older goalie, or do we trade him for whatever we can?
Trade,
yeah.
Yeah, just like that? No hesitation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's very similar to, you know, what would happen with the end of Anderson's tender here. The only thing I would say it's a little different is hopefully if we did deal him, we wouldn't get as, you know, terrible as a return as Elliot, because that was so bad. But just, you know, I think that this time is kind of up. It just feels that way. And even though, like I said, to be honest with you, you know, as bad as he's been, he is still our number one goalie because the other options just aren't there. But, you know, that doesn't mean that the Avs have to settle either. You know, there's got to be a better way. And I know a lot of people like to look at, you know, Varlamov's kind of, they'll take a bunch of his years and they'll, you know, tally it up and say, oh, well, when you do it this way, he's a top 10 goalie in the league or whatnot. But I learned something in business that good is the enemy of great. And that's kind of the way I look at Varlamov. You know, he's good. He's always, you know, pretty good. The season's a little down, but still, I would still call him good. That doesn't mean he's great, you know, and the Avs need a great goalie.
Right.
He's consistently inconsistent.
Is he? Or do we like see a pattern developing here? Because it seems to me like they're trying to protect him from the injury that everyone expects him to have about this time of year, the groin injury, whatever it is. So it seems like he's almost consistent in a way that isn't good for us right now. And as he gets older, that's only going to get magnified, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like Barley, though.
I like him as a human.
I don't know about all that, but I like the idea of Barley. Russian goalie gives you like depth laser eyes, and sometimes he's so on his game that the other guys kind of piss themselves a little bit. Like, I miss that guy.
But that's the part that you're missing right now. He's not there.
if he's our best goalie.
He's consistently inconsistent.
Well, who do you trade him for? A better goalie? Just for Vardy straight up? Or do you have to throw things in too? Like, I don't know. There might be an upside to keeping him for now on a 1 or 2 year extension if he's willing to do it.
I think you're just wasting cap space.
Any more money. Don't give him any more money.
No.
I'm doing a little bit of devil's advocate, but
you're wasting cap space and you're wasting potential in calling up someone else or letting someone else give it a shot.
I think you could argue that our goalie depth is our worst position, that we just don't have the pipeline put together. I know we drafted some dudes. I know that Spencer Martin just had a 61 save shutout or something like that, but
68.
Does that transfer? That's crazy, by the way. That's kind of like a record. Yeah. It's got to be.
Yeah. Well,
I don't know what's going on down there, but
Spencer Martin is frustrating because you look at it and he's not even goals.
Well, he's hilarious too. I've never seen a goalie so in his own head, but the way that he'll chase like things around the ice, like he'll go for a puck that is just way out of where he should be for that point of the game. But at the same time, like the way he comes on the ice, the way he skates into the net, like he's just got the kind of crazy that I think makes a great goalie. Goalies have to be somewhat insane to be good, I think.
Yeah.
Well, but I think Spencer Martin, it kind of goes to what you said about Volomov before. I think the idea of him is awesome. And I think, you know, the idea of a guy with that personality, you know, we've seen it before, and it's fun, and he's, you know, he has talent, but I don't see where his game has ever translated into, you know, consistently good or NHL level talent. Yeah. I mean, I think Pavel is the only one, Francouz is the only one that really shows NHL level talent. I'm not sure why they haven't given him a greater look. He looks great in the relief appearances he's had. So I'm not sure why he hasn't gotten a start. I really can't explain that side of it. If the Avs really saw themselves as, you know, contenders for the next, let's call it 2 years, honestly, I swear to you, the guy that I would want, and maybe I would even take Kevin Hayes if it meant that's the only way to do it, I would love it. I mean, Hank. I love Hank. I mean, and I hate the Rangers, you know, living in New York. I really do. But Hank is impossible not to like. And he's still top of his game. The only issue he has is that he's the Rangers goalie, and they are bad. That's really it.
Yeah.
How old is he?
The guy is still top notch.
I think he's 36.
Yeah, he's up there. He's got a good. He's up at 30. He's older.
What makes him good at 36? It makes him look so much better than Barley at 30, though. Is it just the style of play? Because I know Barley, one thing Barley always had for him is when he's on his game, he's quick as shit. He's all over the place. He beats people to the post and has a cigarette while he waits for him to come with that wraparound. Like, he was that quick. And I don't think he is anymore, but I don't see that in Hank. I like Hank, but he seems old and like a liability for the money he would bring.
You know what it is? Henrik has that whole silent assassin thing that like a guy like Roger Federer has. And I mean, I'm not sure how much either one of you guys might be into tennis, but the amazing thing of a guy like Federer, where so many athletes are so obsessed with, you know, that they can't lose, and I'd rather not lose than win, that whole thing, you know, that losing is so much worse than winning is good. Federer's never been that way. You know, Federer can, you know, shake off a loss. It doesn't even affect him, and he goes back out there and he just wants to win. Like, he's more excited to win. He doesn't care about the losing side. And, you know, Lundqvist has always been that type of guy. Like, he doesn't let any of the losses get to him. He's going to go out and do his job. And his reaction time and all of that is still top-notch. I mean, come on. The guy just won the shootout tournament at the All-Star game. You know, he still has all of those abilities. And he's good. He's straight up good. I'm not sure how he's maintained for so long. I mean, Rodor did the same thing, though. You know, so it's not like goalies can't be good when they get older. Volomov, I feel like for him, it honestly is a lot of his hesitation. And I think because he's so nervous about getting injured, that's what a lot of it is. You know, it's almost like he's doubting himself more than anything, which couldn't be solved. He would just have to get out of his own head. And I think, you know, Lundqvist is lucky to not have that type of issue.
Yeah, I was going to bring up the hair, but I didn't want to be that guy. I'm glad you were.
Yeah, no, it's the hair. And totally the suits. Like, he's Mr. GQ. Let's bring him here.
I love that he has a personality like that.
Yes. Yeah, he is 36. I just looked it up. So he definitely is a little bit. I think he also has a little bit more of a proven history and less inconsistencies.
The Rangers well enough to tell me if they have shit defense. Like, is he good because he's good, or is he good because he's in front of him, is what I'm saying?
No, his defense is terrible. I mean, they gave all that money to Shattenkirk, and he's been complete shit for them.
Okay, so he's maybe a lights out bully. Oh, well played. Do you want to like trademark that really quick? Hashtag it. Go ahead.
Yes. Hashtag Shittenkirk.
There you go. All right, last one. And this is the one that I definitely have a stance on it, but I'm not going to tell you yet. This is Big Z Zadorov.
I think Big Z has gotten a kind of an unfair shake from fans and from the coaching staff. I would keep him. I think there's so much ability there. And I actually got to say, even though he kind of seems like a meathead at times when you look at him, I think the guy has a decent amount of hockey IQ. You know, Callie was talking earlier about Barry having a guy that just kind of, you know, sits back and doesn't jump into a play and make poor decisions. I've seen actually a lot of that out of Big Z, you know, having that smart to sit back and let his offensive defenseman that he's with, you know, make plays.
And for me, I love Z. As long as he's not going to fight us about how much money he makes again, I say keep him. It was so frustrating having him fight. I get it. You want to get paid as much as you can, but like that was so frustrating because I love the guy. He's a great player.
So he's going to take penalties. How do you feel about that?
I think they play better when he takes penalties.
I do too.
Honestly.
Like I see that as part of his game. Like he's going to take penalties, and that's because he plays so close to that edge with so much size. And I think we 100% need that. We need another one of those.
Yeah,
I mean, to me, it reminds me of you know, Ryan Wolfson. Now, granted, you know, Ryan Wolfson wasn't such a big talent guy, but it made you know, forwards and you know, offensive players think twice, you know, about kind of like mindlessly flying up the ice with the puck because they know that he was gonna hip check and flip them, you know, right over his back, and he wasn't afraid to do something like that. And I think that Zadorov does that on the ice when he's there. You know, he makes guys think twice about just flying up the ice.
And he smiles while he's doing it. Like, he knows he's going to destroy you. He's just waiting for the chance and hoping he doesn't get a penalty. Almost everything he does, he looks around for the refs right after. Like, did I do bad?
I think one of my other favorite things, I don't know if you guys have watched this video at all, but the Avs just play, and it was like the Mikko Rantanen one, what would you change? But it was Z. And almost everybody on the team was like, I wouldn't change anything about it. Like, he's perfect.
I think so, too. I think that there's a place for his style of play, usually. Yeah.
And for most people on the team, like, jokingly, they said, I would give him a mute button, like, make him talk less, stuff like that. But that it wasn't, like, it wasn't anything that was, like, pressing to get everybody on the team to be that, like, no, he's great.
He's in a lot of trade rumors right now, though.
No.
Yeah, he is, for sure.
No, he's young. Yeah. He's a good defenseman.
TSN's all over it. I don't think we should either.
Leave him be.
And when you get back to his contract, that's what you're supposed to do. It is still a business at that point. He's supposed to ask for more than he's worth and see if he gets it. And if not, then agree to whatever. But you got to watch yourself on that too. There's a certain amount of loyalty. So if the team's doing that to a player, like the whole Mac thing, it could cause some issues later if you ever want to sign them again. I think since his last contract issues and now, he's kind of proven who he is. We know exactly what to expect, and we can point to it and compare him to other players in the league and say, you're not better than that guy. You're not getting paid more than that guy.
Right.
Maybe. Maybe I'd be a horrible GM.
Can I draw one out to you guys?
Yes.
Yeah.
Eric Johnson.
Now I'm doing like you guys. I'm like, ugh. Like, I hesitate because I really like the guy. I like the idea of him. He's never been what was promised in the trade, I don't think. But he's another guy. Like, if you believe in intangibles, he brings them. He's a guy who's also, he holds people accountable on the ice without even moving his lips. Like, people play different
he has
when he's
an
around.
For a reason.
So I don't know. I mean, if you're looking for the future and what's best for the team and somebody makes you a reasonable offer, I think you have to take it. I really do. But I would hate to see him go just on an emotional level. And I'm not above that. I'm a fan, man. I'm not one of these reporters who's out there like, oh, I have to be biased or not biased. Like, I have to be like totally open-minded and just call it as I see it. I'm like, no, fuck that. I want to see him on the team.
Well, and it's hard to take emotions out of this game because players on the ice, they're emotional. Like, coaches, they're emotional. So it's hard to take emotions out of things. Mm-hmm. I think because he is injury prone as well. Just God forbid his luck in the most ridiculous ways.
Well, he puts himself in places where he's going to get hurt, though. And that's both a quality and a curse, right? Like, he's willing to make that play. He's willing to put his body on the line for these sort of things, but he's not getting any younger. And I think that recovering takes longer, but that one to the face, I mean, that's just unfortunate. He's had a couple injuries where you're like, what the hell?
How did that even happen?
Yeah. All right. Let's be quiet. Cause I think that this was a setup. What do you think, Steven?
Well, I'm going to give you guys a prediction on EJ. I think that EJ ends up being the captain of the Seattle expansion team when the Avalanche trade him to them so that they don't have to get a guy picked from the team.
Well, jeez, that was bold and future thinking. Wow.
That, like, semi broke my heart hearing you say that as well.
I don't think that's a bad move, though. But I don't know, man. I mean, there's a place for loyalty, and I think he's been super loyal. I think he's a guy who's went, this team is shit. My stats look like hell, but I'm in for the long run. Let's do this, guys. Let's see if it happens. Like, he's willing to walk out of this career without a cup if that's what it takes to find out if Colorado can do it, is the impression I get. He also walks off buses backwards, which I don't get, but...
I agree with all that. My only thought process is, it sounds kind of like screwed up and, so much more about bottom line. But how many leaders do you really need? They have Landeskog. If they kept Barry, he's definitely a leader on the team. It's got to be about winning and the guys that are going to give you the best chance to win. And while EJ still has a lot of skill, if there's a move that you can make that's going to better your team without him, I think it's something that has to be done.
It does. I just don't like it.
Yeah, it just hurts my heart a lot.
But, I mean, you're right. And also, if we get a good guy who comes in, it takes everybody exactly 8 days to go, yeah, this was the best trade ever. Won the trade. I'm so over that, by the way. You know what else I'm over? This is a total sidebar, by the way. This don't at me thing. Like, then shut the hell up. Like, why are people saying don't at me if they're going to say some bullshit? That's like, I don't want to argue, but here's my case. Now don't tell me yours.
That's like, okay. This isn't racist or this isn't sexist or whatever.
It's like, you can't just broadcast that and then go, but I don't want anyone to disagree with me.
Right.
All right. I'm going to flip the script on us a little bit, though.
All right.
So we're going to go back to GM mode because I'm fascinated by this world right now. And here's the thing. First up, are we in any position to even think about making a playoff run, a deep cup run?
No.
I mean, I think you have to let the next couple of games, tell the story. This is a long break. The top line has had their chance to, give off some of their fame and how good they've been. Let's see it now turn to, I think seriously, they, as crazy as it sounds, just such a small sample size. This next handful of games before the trade deadline, the next bunch of games before the trade deadline have to be it. Like they have to base everything off of this, but yet still in the end, I don't buy, even if they turn it around, I would not be biased. They have enough that they can turn around, just with entry-level contracts that come up as trades. I don't do rentals, me personally. I'm not a big fan of that, unless it's a guy that, you can maintain. Everyone's going to ask about the Avs' first-round picks. Neither of those should end up being traded, because this is a team that, if they bought at the deadline and they got a guy, once again, I'll mention a Kevin Hayes since he's been so talked about, they can still end up blowing the last of the season, and then that pick that they trade, even if it's their own, could end up being a lottery pick. So I gotta be honest with you, I hold on to everything.
Yep, I think I like both your answers. The short one of it's not time to do that, but the other one, and I think you have to keep playing the long game. That's what we set ourselves up for. We have a team that is growing up together, a lot of young guys, but they're coming up together, and to just throw in somebody who's probably a vet who's, looking at a UFA, gonna make a lot of money later, but the hopes that we might make this miraculous run, our goaltending gets amazing and our top line holds it together and there's no mental issues with anyone, is unrealistic. I think even if the goal is just to see if we can get in the playoffs, I don't think you make those moves right now. I think you make the ones that make sense, I mean, hopefully now, but also next year and the next year. The kind of moves that go, okay, if we trade this guy, it might even hurt us a little bit this year, but we know damn well he's going to pair super well with Makar, and we need a guy who can hold together the things that Makar is not going to be brilliant at. And who says Makar's even in the league next year? I know everybody's like hyped on this guy, but he's not playing NHL hockey. He's playing great hockey where he's at, but he needs to go through a camp. He needs to play some guys who are bigger on a rink where you're going to get killed if you don't have your head up. Like, I want to see him stress tested a little bit before I'm like, this guy's coming straight into the NHL.
And maybe he just wants to stay in college. Who knows?
Well, he's shown that side, hasn't he? And I like that side about him. I think that's what Sakic likes about him, too, is like the dude's like, look, I made, a promise to the guys who play shoulder and shoulder with me, and I'm going to honor that. I think there's super value in that, a lot of value.
Even like
he will absolutely be in the NHL next year.
Okay, we can make a bet on it. What do you want to bet? Do you drink beer?
I do.
Okay, I'll bet you a beer, but you need to know I drink gluten-free beer, and it's way expensive, so keep that in mind.
Okay.
All right. Callie, you getting in on this?
Maybe not.
But it's a beer.
I think even he's shown like his consistency with he knows himself and he's not afraid to tell you that, even if it's going to piss you off and you're not going to like it. With play in the World Juniors again, he decided, he said, you know, I need to chill, recover, and didn't play. Instead, he just waited and stayed in college and hung out.
Yeah, I mean, and he's going to come into a team where there's a lot of personalities too, and I think chemistry is underrated. I think that, you know, it shows up in video games or whatever, but it's for real. I think that we proved that by getting rid of Duchesne. I mean, Sakic, to his credit again, took a long time, got a great deal out of it, but who says he's going to walk in? I'm guessing the scouts are looking at this. I'm guessing the scouts are going, hey, this guy's all heart and he's loyal or whatever, or they're going to be like, he's great, but that first contract extension is going to be a bitch, you know?
Personally, I would like to see him and Timmons both half a season in the AHL. Let them step into that role, maybe play with Gertsen, Graves, whoever, and let them kind of develop that defensive defenseman, offensive defenseman, and a little bit of a bigger game. Because in the AHL, everyone's trying to make the NHL team. So they are pushing each other so freaking hard, and the game is so fast, and the hits are so hard, that I think that would be it for both of them to be able to then step into the NHL with a little bit more of an idea of how it works.
Okay. So we're going to keep going down this path. What moves would you make right now? So let's pretend that you are going to go for the cup, even if you think it's a horrible idea, like play devil's advocate. Like, let's say we got to do it now. EJ has to get a cup. This is our only chance. Brian needs that cup, whatever your motivation is. Like, what moves do you make today if you were going to go for the cup? Short-term moves doesn't make sense. I get it, because we all agree on that. But like, what do you do right now if you had to play that other role? Like, we know damn well Nasper is going to hit us next year. We got to win it this year. What do you do?
The only guys that I would look at would be guys that would ironically cost more, which is probably why I'm so against making a move, because I think that, you know, it's a more like a go big or go home type of thing. I would look at, and I mentioned earlier, Wayne Simmons. I think Wayne Simmons would be phenomenal for what the Avalanche need to get done, or a player much like him, similar, Chris Kreider. That's why another thing that drives me crazy when I hear, you know, the Avalanche talking about, you know, Kevin Hayes and that's connection with the Rangers and whatnot. Because, man, every time they mention the Rangers, all I keep on saying is, why not Chris Kreider? Because that, to me, is the guy that could really make a difference for the Avalanche. So those are two guys that I would personally look at. And then probably another defenseman. There's actually a lot of them out there. I can't speak for who exactly that I would say, you know, they should specifically go after. But I would love to add another defenseman to the team.
Yeah, are you looking for a defenseman or somebody small, fast, scores goals?
No, I would say probably right in the middle. Maybe like, once again, ironically, since I just talked about getting rid of him, maybe someone more of the Eric Johnson mold. You know, kind of right in the middle, has offensive skill, but not so offensive. Because I don't think the Avalanche don't really need power play help. You know, and they don't really need somebody who's going to put up huge offensive numbers. But just like the offense needs some secondary scoring, the defense having some secondary scoring would be nice too. Because as of right now, they have Barry, who obviously scores a ton, and then Eric Johnson and Samuel Girard kind of score. You know, so it'd be nice to have a secondary scoring defenseman who is not putting up huge points but can do it.
Cool. What do you got, Kelly?
So
remember, like, asteroids come and we're all gonna die. You started smoking. Yes, because exactly, we knew it. That, yeah. Kind of like, mm-hmm. that level, go for it.
Like he said, Wayne Simmons is a great option. Personally, I hate him just because I hate playing against him, which is kind of the feeling that other teams get about, like, Gabriel Landeskog, like you mentioned earlier. So having like a physical presence on our second line, I think, completes that line a little bit and brings it up a little bit. So I do agree, Wayne Simmons would be a good move. I also do think that we need a goalie that has something higher than a 0.9 save percentage. What that's going to cost, I don't know. Who exactly I want, I don't know, because I don't know who even is up for grabs at this point. But for me, it's definitely a goaltender and then someone to complete the top two lines, top six forwards.
I feel like you guys are being careful still. Like, we're going to die. So I think we dump all of our other, our picks, right? everything, our first rounders, everything we got. We dump as much as we can get for that. Maybe those other fools don't know we're going to die yet. And that would get us like a Hank or something. I'm pretty sure we could pull that off if we did enough of those. But would you go as far as to like have a player you hate? And I'll give you an example, because I hate a handful of people. And I use hate loosely. I mean, I wouldn't, you know, not smile at them if they were there. But Brad Marchand, would you put him on the team?
Marchand? No. I mean,
is it just pure hatred?
Pure hatred.
Okay, go
on. There's a lot of guys I don't like, but I mean, with that skill, I think I would have trouble saying no to that.
How do you bring him onto the team if that was happening? Let's go down that rabbit hole. Like, him and Landy don't get along, right? Do they have to have a thumb war to decide who's right, who's wrong, and then move on? Or how do you bring
Landeskog's
a guy like that
on? No, Landeskog's
the
captain. He's just right.
Yeah, that's
captain
how it works.
Captain Landeskog, you're right.
Okay. Hold on. Let me think about somebody else who I really dislike. Lucic.
That would be a no, because Lucic is overpaid and not nearly as good.
Am I saying it wrong?
And he's a dick.
You're killing me, man. You make me feel like I say everything wrong. Say Lucic for me.
Lucic?
Oh, Jesus. I'm going to stick with my way. You do yours. That's cool. I can't do it. Who else? Somebody tell me a player you hate.
They have to still be active?
Yeah. Like, for, you know, we're going to die. We're all drinking every day. That scenario. Like, we're at that level.
Pecorine.
Really? What do you hate about him?
Oh, I hate him.
Is it the name?
No, it's because
he's such a pekka.
Because he's that big goalie that I really want, so I hate him because we play against him all the time and he always kills us.
I would take him over Dubnyk in a heartbeat.
Oh, have the All-Star game.
So Dubnyk,
I would not take any Minnesota Wild player ever.
Yeah, okay. I'm just trying to figure out where your level of hate comes into rational decisions. So I think we've got it. Like,
Minnesota,
I think Dumba
Wild
would be great for the team,
hate.
But I'm like, nope. Mm-mm. Sorry, man. You missed your chance. All right, let's talk about the evolution of Mikko Rantanen. I'm going to say some things first, and then you can tell me I'm a fool, okay?
Okay.
I feel like he has completely adjusted to the NHL game, where I don't know if that was so true last year, as good as last year was. Before that, definitely. I remember seeing him at rookie camp here in Colorado when he did that, and he hurt his ankle and all that. And I didn't see in him what he is now. Like, I didn't see this guy who was just going to take over the league. And I think that not only is he adjusted to the game, but he's starting to learn how to play the physical game, which is super important, but also a little sketchy, because we see Mac every now and then go, no, I could fight. Like, I don't want to see Mikko go, yeah, drop him. Let's try it. He's big, but I don't think he's going to want to fight against anyone. And so with that, though, I think that also there's this mental game that has really improved his mental game, almost to the point where he seems frustrated too every now and then. And that's probably good. He seems like he's going to respond to that well. But to me, I think we're seeing the evolution of Mikko, and I'm not even convinced we've seen the best yet. I think he could be even better in the right circumstances.
I think what we've seen this year from Mikko, opposed to last year, even with, you know, how many points did he have last year? I think it was 84. I mean, you know, obviously a huge season, but a lot of that did feel as if he was carried, whereas this season, you definitely feel like he's doing a lot of the carrying, which is, you know, a huge difference, you know, to be able to actually be the reason why so much of it is happening. Obviously, what was the stat earlier on in the season about how many of McKinnon's goals, you know, that he was actually assisting on? It was essentially like any one, you know, that he had. And that's a big deal. You know, when I was watching a lot of the games last year, specifically in October and November, when he had a decent amount of points, you know, I watched it and I was like, oh, look at that. You know, Rantanen was on as a secondary assist again on that play. Whereas this season, like, you see him making the plays. And I think that there has been a definite evolution. I don't know if statistically, if, like, the numbers will go any higher, but I do agree that I don't think we've quite seen the best, just because I think he can actually become more of a great scorer. I mean, look how long it took Landeskog to really get his knack as a goal scorer, and I would love if he can carry on what he's been doing this year. That part of the game sometimes takes guys a little bit longer than, you know, the passing and the ability to be a playmaker. So I can definitely see Rantanen actually becoming a more prolific goal scorer at some point.
Okay. Kelly?
So I definitely agree that Mikko's come a long way. I think work with McKinnon and Sydney's trainer as well. I thought I read something about
Maybe. I'm trying to remember the guy's name. Are you talking about Belfry? Because that guy's amazing. If you guys don't know him, look him up. He knows the game so well. Daryl Belfry.
That might be. I think that he's developed a lot this year, and I'm excited to see him develop farther. I think his confidence has come up so much that he's just doing all of these things that maybe he didn't think that he could do before. And he did have some time to develop in the AHL before he came into the NHL. And
he's
gone
on record
as
saying that it was really good for him too, right? Did I hear that right? Yeah.
Yeah. And when he was in Finland, he was playing, and he's been playing for so long throughout his career that I think he's been able to develop a little bit faster than a few others on our team have necessarily. But I think he's just going to keep going and just get better as it goes along. And it is nice to have that kind of 1-2 punch with Nathan and Miko together. I think when we moved line, it kind of brought his confidence level down a little bit and he wasn't as effective. And I think that's just because he's a young player. I don't think that would have the same
effect. Certain amount of confidence that comes from having Landeskog on the ice to have your back. Because when people get up in his face, Landy's like on a beeline. He's headed to, like you saw it the other day too, with I think it was Mac or, no, I can't remember who it was, but Landy was right there in somebody's face when they were getting a little bit uppity with somebody. And that's underrated. I tell you, it's like these guys know he's got their back. And so they're more willing to just be themselves. And like, as soon as these guys are having fun, they're so much better. When they're squeezing that stick hard and they're trying to, you know, not mess up, that's when you see everybody start to fall apart. So that confidence they get from that is pretty cool.
Yes. So I think that's a huge part of it as well.
So let's pretend you're his guidance counselor. What does he need to work on? Ooh, do you want to go back to Steven really quick?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's do that.
What would he have to work on?
Yeah, I mean, he's awesome. We get that. But I mean, everyone has something to work on, right? His English is getting better, so you can't go there.
I would probably say that, more on a confidence side of it. I think all of the top line guys, to an extent, when they have more of the playmaker, you know, we used to see this a bit on some of the top lines with O'Reilly and Duchesne and all in the past. Guys get very complacent. So I feel like Rantanen almost has to play like he is the guy leading the league in scoring, and I think he might forget that sometimes. And he's too quick to just kind of pass it off in any direction. And we've seen the plays that the guy can make when he leaves the puck on his own stick. I mean, he just manhandles people down the ice. So I would like to see him grow a little bit more confident in the puck, and not to be too stereotypical hockey fan, but, you know, shoot the puck, that type of thing. Because I think, like I said earlier, I honestly think that the guy can be a prolific scorer. He can add that to his arsenal. And I don't think it means that he's going to have 150 points, you know, to where he's going to score and have all these assists. But it's not always the worst thing to knock a little bit of assist down if it means you're going to score the puck. And I honestly think he can do it.
Okay. So back to you, Callie. What do you think?
I'm still thinking.
You can't say that.
I'm still thinking.
All right, I'll tell you what mine is. I think that it's kind of in line with what you're saying, and I know that he just did this the other day and did the splits meanwhile scoring a goal, but I think he could drive the net more. I think that he's super comfortable in his space to shoot, and his passes, his assists should count for 2 points, really. Some of those are just so amazing versus other people who they touched it before the other guy shot it in kind of thing. Like, chances wouldn't exist without some of the passes he's making, so that's his sweet spot. And I think that's something you have to let a guy do. But I think every now and then he needs to just keep people guessing by just making a serious power move to the net and just going in. Full expectation to be on your ass in the end, but hopefully the puck's in the net. Like, one of those every 3 or 4 games, I think, would make the rest of his game even better. You guys could say when I'm wrong, by the way. I'm just sound full of shit, too. I'm just throwing stuff out there.
You just agreed with me, so I'm not going to say you're wrong now.
All right. Well played, by the way. All right, Callie, come on, have a thing.
My thing is probably just, like, use his big body a little bit more. Like, he's been using it, but I think he could up it a little bit. Whether it's maybe hitting people a little bit more, learning how to do that, or, like you said, driving to the net a little bit more. He is a big body. He is intimidating.
but I think that he could do that a lot more than he does.
I think a playoff series would do wonders for his career, just to feel that pace, that physicality of what happens there. I think that as soon as he experiences a playoff series, at least, he's going to come back in the regular season even better, because he's going to figure that out or he's going to die. Playoffs are such a different game. They really are. And it's almost silly, like, how many games we play to get to that stage, but playoff hockey is one of those ones where you wish you could just bottle it up and let the Avs use playoff hockey for 2 minutes a game and put it right at the beginning, when they usually are like, oh, we're going to play hockey now? I didn't know that's why you dropped the puck, kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. It's kind of interesting.
Is my opinion.
It's kind of interesting how many playoff type games they have had that aren't actually in the playoffs. Like the one against the Predators a few weeks ago, that one felt like playoff hockey, but they really only played probably like 30 minutes of playoff hockey. They didn't play like an entire game of playoff hockey.
This might piss you off, but we're not better than the Predators, and to me that's the benchmark. If we're going to have any success in the postseason, we have to be able to beat a team like that, and right now they're better than us.
I think them and the Jets.
That's the story of the Avalanche, though. Whenever they play those two teams specifically, but pretty much any top-notch team, you know, they can't seem to play a complete game. Whether they play really well at the end after they're already way too far out of it, or they use up all their energy in the first period and then just kind of fall off, they can't seem to play a complete three periods against those top-notch teams. I don't know if that's an experience thing or what, but that's definitely something that they have to kind of get on top of.
I think so. I think 100%, like, that's the benchmark. These teams that can bring the physicality and shut you down that way, like, can you elevate above that? Can you come up with some sort of plan? Oh, man, we should talk about that, too, how we have very few different plays set up. But I think that, you know, that's our Achilles heel. It's like, people figured out this team's fast. Guess what? Hit them and they slow down. Piss them off and they get a little bit out of their head. Like, it's too easy now. People know what we're all about. It's that great success we had to start the season for a couple of other reasons, too. A lot of it had to do with because nobody'd seen this side of us yet. They didn't have the playbook on us. All right, so we're going to talk about tech and tradition and a little bit of what's going on in the league right now. And it seems like they're trying to make this push towards bringing tech back. They're like, hey, you know, the puck with the trail, the tail thing, like, it didn't work before, but now people are going to love it. It seems like they're trying to make that move and give you a lot more of sort of the augmented experience where you have a lot of stuff going on. And for me, I kind of like it, but it seems like they're trying to make it for the new fans so that they can love hockey, where what I'm seeing only really matters to people who are really geeky about the game, who want to know what the gap is between the defenseman and the forward coming down the ice. So I'm curious to know your guys' thoughts on some of the new stuff they're trying to do. And then at the end of this, I want to get into that 200-foot delay of game penalty that Nemo took, because I consider that to be a very traditional thing that is just stupid as hell.
Yeah,
but don't go there yet.
Listen, I am a digital media professional. I deal with, you know, social platforms and virtual reality and AI all the time. So my whole life is this stuff. I like despise it pretty much in you know, ways of how it's going to affect the sport. You know, the stuff that they did at the All-Star game where, like, the players' names above the heads and everything. Like, for really beginning fans, if you can, like, have that up on the internet and let them watch the game like that, you know, great. But, man, if that stuff is on my TV, I'm going to be going crazy. Like, I don't want that anywhere near my viewing experience.
You should be able to turn it off, just like I think you should be able to turn off the announcers and just hear the sounds of the game. Matter of fact, I would pay extra money if I could get the players mic'd up and just hear that part of the game. Like, them cussing, whatever, I'll sign waivers, whatever. Like, I want to hear them and what they're really doing way more than I want to hear somebody doting on, you know, Sidney Crosby again or whoever.
Yes, if we could mute, that would, oh, my God.
And I'm not even mad at McNabb like everybody else is. I think he's a fun, crazy old grandpa guy. That's cool. I hear other announcers and they're way worse for sure. But for me, like, to me, that would be a side of tech I really want to see. And I would want to be able to do that, like, with what you were saying, Steven, that the names above them, like, no, that's rookie move. You know, learn the number. You'll know who they are right away. Easy. And if you could turn all those things on and off, that would be awesome.
I mean, if there's a way, like, on the internet, like, you know, to pick a player and that's the player that you follow up and down the ice. And, you know, listen, especially in a sport like basketball, a lot of people are more of a fan of a player than the actual team. So right. If you want to be able to follow that player around the ice, no matter what he's doing, puck or not, that would be pretty cool. But I think there has to be a way that, you know, it's only by choice. It can't be something that, you know, the masses have to view it in this specific way. Because I think there's just, you know, hockey, unlike some other sports, is, a lot of it's more about retention than new fans. I know they want new fans, but they have to realize they're going to alienate a lot of the fans that they want to keep and that have been with them for a long time. You know, hockey has been a much slower growth than other sports, so they have to at least keep in mind that they'll upset some old-time fans that they changed too much. There's a lot of things that they can do, though, especially with, like, virtual reality and stuff like that. But what you said about, you know, muting the announcers, I think is great. I watched the New York Giants game this year that the announcing feed cut out for a solid 10 minutes of game time, and it was glorious. I mean, it was awesome watching the game that way.
Can you imagine watching a game without somebody telling you what you're supposed to appreciate or what you should be watching or how this is just the most unfortunate bounce known to man? It would be glorious. It would be absolutely glorious, and I would pay good money to see it. A huge thank you to both Steven and Callie. Bonus points to Callie for showing up when she was sick. If you'd like to follow up with either one of them, check the show notes, and you can find them on Twitter. This and every other show that we do is brought to you by AbsFam, absfam.com. A gazillion shirts, 1,000 stickers, a whole bunch of cool stuff that you can have whenever you want it. Just go order, and it'll be there in a couple days. absfam.com. Stay awesome.